Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo. Today is February the 13th. Geez, we're in between two birthdays, Lincoln's birthday and, of course, Valentine's Day, my dear.
That's not a birthday.
Well, it's better than a birthday.
Maybe it's St. Valentine's birthday.
There it is. That's
there
what it is.
Okay, happy birthday, everybody. You just had one, too.
Indeed.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thanks for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Every Monday, live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour, and we've got a great show for you today. It's going to include things like, are heart screening tests really a good idea if you don't have symptoms? That was a mind-blower for me.
And is defensive medicine worth it, or is it just driving up health care costs?
So what's the most powerful anti-aging medicine we have? I can tell you now, it's not a drug.
And the most powerful non-meat sources of iron that are key to its absorption.
And what's happening to our personal medical debt, particularly here in California?
And why is it important to screen for osteoporosis and heart failure patients?
All right.
And
so
much more.
If you want to join us in our conversation and you have questions about our topics or about your health, give us a call. The number here is 888-874-4888.
On this, well, first I think we need to acknowledge that Whitney Houston died. Great loss to the music industry and to everybody, really. She's seemed like a beautiful person and very, very talented, and it was really too bad that they found her dead in the bathtub. They said her face was under the water, and they talked about the fact that she was on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications. And then there was another clip I saw in the news last night where they were saying that they thought she'd had a couple of drinks. But I'm thinking that that might have not been a good mixture.
Well, for sure. And, you know,
and of course, we're still awaiting the results of an autopsy. But
well, we're talking about people, you know, using street drugs as an issue. And she was doing that. She admitted in an interview with Oprah a couple of years ago that she was using cocaine, using marijuana, and there's a good chance he's using other drugs as well.
Oh.
But the most common cause for deaths and complications are not street drugs at all. They are prescription drugs that are misused.
People don't take them seriously enough many times, and they do mix them with alcohol, which is not a good idea.
Well,
and when you listen to the side effects of some of these drugs, they even say them on the TV that they can lead to coma and death. So.
Well, there's no question about that, that's for sure. And then you start looking at how much value is there in using these things to begin with, and it's very debatable. I think there's much more chance for things to be misused when you're talking about medications to try and solve problems that are psychiatric, that are problems that should never be dealt with using drugs. Our medical profession, our psychiatrists, ought to be ashamed of themselves, and I have a real bone to pick with them because they've become psychopharmacologists. And in, when you're doing psychopharmacology, you are looking at real problems that get us into the jams we're in today, because they never, ever solve the problems that we have. Never, ever solve the problems that we have when it comes to psychiatric disorders. When you've got anxiety and depression, you don't work it out. I'm sorry, but that problem is not going to just disappear.
And isn't it a shame when you think of somebody that's so talented and beautiful and in the public eye and well-liked and so forth, that they would be depressed?
Well, that's right. It is a shame, but that's kind of like the way the world is in a lot of ways. So we have...
Well, just like people, you know, that have a lot of money and... Many times they're depressed, you know, or they'll commit suicide.
Well, it's the value system we have in this country. It's about I, me, my, and mine. It's all my stuff. It's about narcissism. It's about getting ahead of other people. It's about competition and being aggressive and adversarial. I mean, even in sports, we do that because things get out of hand. It shouldn't be life and death on a football field or on a baseball field or in a tennis court. It should be something where where you're having a good time and sharing the team spirit with people and testing your own capacity to do what it is that you're out there trying to measure and compete with yourself if you want to compete. But the real problem is we don't have community values that really support community. What they support is just us fighting against the rest of the world. And in many ways, that's what happens to people who grow up, particularly in areas that are underprivileged.
Well, many times, too, people are carrying baggage from their childhoods.
Oh, no question. I mean, if you're born in Atlanta, in the wrong part of Atlanta, guess what you're going to do? You're going to be living in a gang. And if you don't, you're going to be trampled. It's just the way that life is. And then try to get out. It's
well,
like
there are
you
a lot
get
of
trapped.
There are a lot of people that suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, whether they've been in the services or not.
Well, there are all kinds of ways to go wrong, and what we need is a community to support one another so that we can love everyone that, you know, that we're connected to and share and be with and listen and care. It's all those good words that we give lip service to, but we don't really take into action in our personal lives. And that's what's missing. So you see something like what happens to Whitney Houston. It's not unusual. I mean, what happened to Elvis Presley? What happened to Marilyn Monroe? What happened
Michael
to
Michael Jackson?
I mean, all these people have had problems that were enormous that they couldn't deal with. And just because they're successful superstars doesn't eliminate them from that. And when our doctors don't understand it, and we don't really spend the time to try and do something about that, then we have a real issue in terms of how we're going to resolve all the challenges that we're seeing, like what happened to Whitney Houston.
Well, God bless her.
Well, I say that
too. And let's
too.
Hope that others can learn from this, you know, to not mix drugs and alcohol and to be careful with prescription medications. And we're just going to have to wait for the results of her autopsy.
Well, from that point of view, that's right. But from the point of view of how we're not dealing with the problems that we're facing in our society with anxiety, depression, with phobias and anxiety attacks and panic attacks, all the PTSD things that happen, we're not dealing with those in an effective way. And nobody really cares in a serious enough way to really do something about it. We wouldn't have homeless people on the streets of San Francisco, which we do, or any other big city in this country. And don't tell me we don't have the funds to pay for that when we've got trillions of dollars in our budget that are spent on things that are far less worthy than that.
Well, if we all came from love and thought about the whole universe as a whole and helped one another, you know, just like that book about I wish I knew, or what is it about what I learned
everything
in kindergarten?
Everything I ever needed to know, learned in
one.
Kindergarten.
Yeah. Like that.
Well, that is the way to do
Instead
it.
Instead of being so after money and competitive in that way. But anyway, let's get on to some of our topics.
All right.
False positive test results. Usually we associate with cancer. We talk about that a lot on this show. And they can lead to more invasive tests and procedures. And now, with February being American Heart Health Month, it's come to light that heart tests may be unnecessary unless there are symptoms and can have the risk of false positives, leading to possible complications from more invasive procedures and more treatments following that.
Yeah, well, see, Vicki, you've got a really good point there. I mean, look at the business with coronary arteriograms. And I have to admit, I bought into this, too, back in the 60s and 70s. And I will still remember, I'll never forget this woman who was 36 years old. She was one of the first patients I had in 1970 when I went into practice. And she had hypertension and she had chest pain. And I knew she was having a heart attack. And at the time, what we did is we assumed that we had to do coronary arteriograms. It was just coming into fruition. And so like a real good doctor who knew all the latest things that were happening in medicine at that time, I shipped her off to Stanford and said, okay, let's go ahead and see if we can deal with it at the best place that we could. Well, she had seven little kids. Under the age of 15, okay, downwards, and she died on the table. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, we were trying to do the best thing we could. She might have survived the heart attack. You don't know. But when they did the surgery, that was the final thing. I mean, it's obviously the trauma of the surgery added a lot to it. So now we look today, you know, after all those years of experience, it's 40 years later.
Except for she was somebody that was having a symptom.
Yes, she was.
So today you would probably recommend that.
Today I probably would. But in the beginning, when we had that situation develop, I didn't have enough experience to know what to do. And when you have a new procedure that's not well done, because we haven't done enough of them, we don't have enough experience, these are the kinds of things that happen. So it's an example where you can go wrong even if you do what seems to be the right thing.
So what goes wrong nowadays when people do these procedures when there are not symptoms?
Well, we did that with people who had coronary arteriograms that were abnormal but didn't have symptoms. It was part of a workup. And they were generally all being treated with stents or with medications, but less so, or doing heart surgery to fix those bypasses. In fact, 97% of the surgeries and the bypasses and the stents that were performed were unnecessary, as it turned out, because people on medical treatment did equally well and didn't have the early deaths. So in that case, which is an extreme one, and by the way, coronary arteriograms is not one of the five tests, and that's just the extreme example of the tests that are designed, at least in theory, to find early disease and to prevent it from getting worse and causing heart attacks and whatever else.
Okay, so these tests will show that it looks like there's a clot forming, for example.
Well, it'll show there's a blockage of an artery.
Okay, so there, whether it be a clot or a plaque, some kind of cholesterol or what have you.
Okay.
Okay, so they figure that it's a good idea to get that out of there because that's going to prevent it from totally occluding.
Well, it's a kind of common sense approach that we jump into a lot of the time, and it's reasonable to think that way, but the bottom line is it doesn't turn out that way. And so you then have to go back and track how these people do. And what they did is they tracked a lot of things that were done. You look at the EKG. Nobody goes to surgery without an EKG. That's just thought as the gold standard. But when you look at the research that's been done on EKGs, there are no trials showing that they stave off disease if people don't have symptoms. So you have to have a symptom for an EKG to be more positive than it could be negative in terms of it leading to doing additional testing and to maybe do procedures because of it.
And I've also heard of people that have had EKGs and they walk out of the doctor's office with a normal EKG and fall flat in their face with a heart attack.
Well, that's true, too. We have this thing called a wellness buffer, which is our buffer between where we have symptoms and where we are when we have perfect health. And if that buffer is too short, too small, not broad enough, and we're too close to where you start to have symptoms, it doesn't take much to take us over the edge to a place where then we're vulnerable for a heart attack. But you can look at other tests, too. They talk about the carotid ultrasound. You know, carotid ultrasounds are part of packages that vascular doctors and radiologists and people who are in...
Well, first, can we just say what a carotid artery is? It's in your neck, and it goes up to your brain, and
right.
You can, if it has plaques in it or what have you, they can...
You can
come
you can
off and
it.
Go up into your brain.
All right, so
cause
you,
a stroke.
So you find with this test, which costs $200 or $300, a lot of the times false positives. And if you wind up doing a surgery, okay, for
where they
this,
ream it out.
Yeah, 1 to 3% will die, and even more will have strokes. And there's no data showing that it actually saves lives if you don't have symptoms that suggest that you're in a situation where you might get
but
a stroke.
Of course, you can see why people don't want to wait until they have symptoms.
Well, it's a scary thing.
Yeah.
You find out that you have
so
a blocked artery.
So this is why you're saying it might be better to not do the test and not know.
Well, that's what these people are saying who wrote the article. And then they talk about heart echoes, or sonograms of the heart, which are a way of looking to see how strong the heart is and to see if it's got problems with circulation. And that leads oftentimes to more testing, and it too is not proven to be of any value unless there are symptoms. Same thing with stress tests or with CT scans of the heart. There's no proof that these do anything.
And plus,
if you don't
with the
have
dye, plus with the dyes, you can end up getting reactions and problems with your kidneys and your thyroid, and the X-rays can cause cancer eventually.
Well, that's true too.
But this was the United States Protective Services Task Force, so this wasn't just anybody that.
No, this was a major article that's saying, "Hey, We got all these tests, we're using them a lot, and it's understandable from the point of view of logic that you're trying to find things early and do something about it, but the data doesn't validate that.
And, of course, the drug companies and the medical device companies are encouraging these tests to be done. They don't mind it if you have a false positive.
Well, that's right. So when you look at these tests we're talking about, you might want to think twice about whether or not you want to do them because they're going to cost money. They're going to lead oftentimes to false positive results, which leads to more tests.
Or complications.
Or even complications, although the tests themselves are fairly safe. Unless you're talking about giving radiation or dye. So you've got a good point there.
Well, when you think about it, when they do these angiograms and so forth, they're threading a catheter a long way from your groin all the way up through your heart.
Right, into the little coronary arteries, that's right. And then doing little high... the technology is amazing. And it certainly makes sense. And that's why in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we were all excited about the high technology of what we could do with a coronary arteriogram, because you could see all the anatomy of what's going on there. And if you saw little blockages, you thought that maybe doing something about it would save lives, only to find out that surgery and stents were not the best way to go. Shocking. Well, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Defensive medicine costs billions of dollars, and doctors are protecting themselves from lawsuits. And is this protecting patients from medical errors, or is it extravagant spending that's just driving up the medical costs?
Well, you know, it's a combination of both, but let's look at it this way. Let's give the doctors the benefit of the doubt here, and it really shouldn't even be worded that way, because doctors want to do the right thing. They want to try and do all the tests they think might be the right test to do to make a diagnosis. And I know I remember when I was doing ICU and CCU medicine, which I did for about 35 years, I was interested in getting the best service. I didn't care so much about what it costs. And so I would do the tests that I thought were appropriate for that patient. The problem is, a lot of the time, those tests come back negative. And the art is to figure out which patients should have which tests when. And that takes something called clinical judgment. And if you don't have a lot of experience with the test, you really don't quite know what to do. It's sort of like the tests that we were talking about earlier for the heart. Should you really do those tests on people as screening? Because you shouldn't do them if it just seems right. You have to do clinical trials first to see if indeed it makes a difference.
Well, you can see why the doctor doesn't want to miss anything.
No.
For the patient's sake, as well as covering themselves and, you know, so that they don't get sued.
Okay, but then there's the flip side of this too, and that's it. When is enough enough? And when a group of people surveyed 1,200 orthopedists, 96% of them said they admitted that they practice defensive medicine that comes to the tune of about $2 billion a year.
And the reason
they did it was to prevent malpractice suits. Now, that's understandable, too, in this litigious society we live in. But is that really something that we should be able to do something about and handle in a different way?
I think people are noticing things like this more because healthcare is in the news so much, and everybody's paying attention to how costly it is and how, you know, with Obamacare and healthcare reform and trying to, mm-hmm. you know, cover more people. And we don't want to be driving up the cost of medical care.
Right.
Eventually, they want it to be, I think, so that the government is the one that is the boss about what tests you're allowed to take and so forth.
Oh, that writing's on the wall, there's no doubt. Plus, what's happening is we're seeing cuts to Medicare and Medicaid so that there's going to be less in the way of service. Now, in a system that depends on technology to be able to resolve its problems because everybody's sick, that's a big disadvantage. What we really need is real healthcare reform. We're looking at how do you change the way we practice medicine so it doesn't cost so darn much. And that, of course, means we have to do wellness and prevention, and we have to teach lifestyle measures to people. And if we do it effectively, it should make a big difference in how many people get sick. If we stop polluting our environment and we start eating healthy food and we get enough rest and we live in community and we support one another as we should in a community, it should make a huge difference in the health of the people that are in the community. So I think we're at a standoff here where we're looking at dollars and how we're going to continue to make money practicing medicine rather than how we're going to provide service. Well, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
So, can we believe what we see on labels?
I don't think so.
It's me. Well, there's a lot that's fake, that's actually that has to do with raw foods. And we
raw foods, too.
Raw foods.
Wow. So it's not just the stuff that comes in a package. So that's right.
Well, actually, I'm going to point out a couple of things just to give you examples, because you can't trust all the labeling. You know, many times you'll see a container, maybe a plastic container, that'll say it has raw juice in it. Like there's one that's called from a company called Raw. It's R-A-A-W.
Uh-huh.
So it's not really means that the food's raw.
Well, no,
it's R-A-A-W .com. You can go to there. But anyway, it's a carrot lemonade sort of juice. Mm-hmm. First of all, people that are into drinking raw foods and organic foods and so forth are usually more sensitive about the container that it's in. They don't want to drink out of plastic. They want to drink out of glass. They also don't want to drink things that are pasteurized, because that means that they've put the product under high heat to kill any possible germs and that sort of thing.
Right.
But anyway, this container says that it's got all these natural ingredients and it's rawsome and it's all this, but it's not raw. And they just trick you to imply that it's raw. So it's not honest. So,
well, most advertising isn't, is it? I mean,
no,
the idea of advertising
is to sell
product.
No, but I just want people to be aware of it. Just like, you know, there are many foods that'll say natural flavors. Well, natural flavors almost always includes MSG.
Mm.
And you're not thinking of that when you're thinking of natural. So you need to be careful of that.
You're right.
Also, you know, when you go to the coffee shops, I've noticed it like in Pete's. I think it's in Starbucks, too. But anyway, it's also another in stores sometimes. It's called Sugar in the Raw. It's those little brown square packets of sugar.
Uh-huh.
And that's the brand name.
Right.
So it's really not, you know, raw sugar. But, you know, it's probably better than
not as bad
than high fructose corn syrup or artificial sweeteners. It's coarse sugar, but it's not raw, and it's brown.
Yeah.
So, you know. But it's just to be aware of these kind of things, so you can be thinking more about it and have it more upfront in your thoughts.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Good point. Oh, great tip, Vicki.
Just remember, they can be fake.
All right. Thank you. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, anti-aging is big business. We all want to be young. We all want to look young. We want to feel young and strong and everything. And it's advertised all over the place, and it seems to be big business. And now researchers have found that exercise is the best anti-aging medicine, with researchers finding that exercise releases growth factors from stem cells that spur regeneration, which could lead to therapeutic techniques to rehabilitate injured muscles and prevent or restore muscle loss that comes with age or atrophy or the inability to exercise.
Well, that's really true, you know, and we do have this fad about everybody has to look young. And a lot of anti-aging doctors, which I have to tell you, I am absolutely not, and I'm opposed to, because I think what these physicians and other practitioners are doing is they're playing with Mother Nature. They're making the assumption that by giving a little bit more testosterone or estrogen or some other hormone that will make your organs work like they did when you were 30 years younger.
Like I was just talking about fake food.
Yeah, well, that's right. And you don't know what the long-term effects are. I mean, I have a friend now who has prostate cancer, and we measured his growth hormone, and it's up over the top. And you begin to wonder, well, gee, if it's high and maybe causing problems with cancer to grow faster, that maybe that would be an issue in somebody who doesn't have cancer outright now, but a tendency towards it. And, of course, most of the anti-aging doctors deny that adamantly, but, you know, we just haven't used it long enough. So anti-aging is something that we have to really be careful about assuming is the right way to go. Now, when we look at stem cells, which is what we're doing now And we know, as Vicki said, that exercise triggers stem cells in muscle to start releasing growth factors that will cause muscles to grow and to make more mitochondria. We talked about that a few weeks ago. And so maybe just reviewing for a second what a stem cell is will give you more of an idea of what's happening here. Stem cells are two kinds, basically. There are embryonic ones, which are taken from the fetus in a very early stage. And there are adult stem cells, and they can differentiate into 200 different kinds of cells in the human body. So there's a lot of ability of these cells to develop into other tissues. Then we have also adult stem cells that come from bone marrow or fat tissue or blood or skin. We store them sometimes from umbilical cord blood. There are people who had the wisdom to think that might be something that was smart, and so they keep them in the freezer. And if you need them 40 years later or 60 years later, they're still there and might be something to use.
Don't we also have them in our fat?
We have them in our fat, yeah. We have them in every tissue in our body. And when things go wrong, okay, with our health, a lot of the time it's the stem cells that are causing regeneration to occur. So we know that stem cells will accumulate in skeletal muscle after exercise, and you would think it would be the stem cells themselves that would differentiate into tissues, but that's not true. It actually, they release growth factors that cause the muscle cells to be very responsive to the strain of exercise, and that makes them develop new fibers. So it's very interesting how this works.
And I guess the drug companies are thinking that eventually they'll be able to use those in some way to help people that are, you know, have atrophied muscles or wasting disease or debilitated and can't exercise.
Well, you know, it's something to think about. Gene therapy is another thing that might be applicable this way. But stem cells, you know, there's a lot of research being done on this. And, I mean, take the example of the heart. We know that if somebody has a heart attack, then you take their stem cells out of their fat tissue and you culture them, and then you put them back in the heart, that the size of the infarct is smaller, and they're less likely to have congestive heart failure or complications from it. Now, in settings like that, we might be willing to give it a try, but as an anti-aging maneuver, I think that's really...
Well, that's pretty extreme.
Well, there are people doing that as anti-aging devices, as almost like facelifts. They're using stem cells to do that.
Yeah,
I mean, everything
scary.
Gets turned into something that can be looked at as a business that's revenue generating. And there's always somebody willing to take on a project like that if it shows like return on investment could be something that's really good. So that's what we're looking at here. And I think that the whole concept of anti-aging is anti-nature, because nature says there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And there's a life cycle. And we should be respecting that. It's not like you really want to live on this planet the way it is, particularly for 1,000 years. I mean, talk about a sentence. That would be something that would be, in my viewpoint, unnatural.
Well, the thing is how you feel, too.
Absolutely.
You know? I mean...
Well, when things are bad
people
enough,
have a lot of opinions about living to be old. You know, some people say, I don't want to be old, and some people want to be old. And
well,
but I think the whole thing is it's about how you feel. I mean, if you're old and you feel good,
well, how about
you don't
if
have a choice about it anyway.
Well, let's say you've had a stroke. Would you take the stem cells? I would. I mean, I think almost anybody would. Or if you had a heart attack and you were in heart failure, would you take it? Yes. If you had a cancer and thought maybe you could solve the cancer with the stem cells, would you do that? The answer is yes, because you're desperate and you want to try and stay alive at any cost almost. I can remember a few months ago when I was dying from complications of cobalt poisoning that had came from an artificial hip that was put in me. And I was ready to die, and I knew it, and my lab work showed it. And I couldn't convince my doctors of the right thing to do because none of them knew about this thing called metallosis. And so I made peace with God right there. And I still remember saying, okay, I'm ready. If you want to take me, I'm really ready. And I wasn't scared. I was happy that to do whatever my maker wanted me to do, whatever Mother Nature had in mind for me was okay. And my regrets were, there are a lot of people that love me that will miss me. And I still have work to do that I think I can contribute to society when it comes to healthcare reform and things like what we're talking about today. And miraculously, I had a full recovery. But going through that process is a test to yourself about, do you really believe the things that you talk about? do you have the courage you say you do and say, well, if God takes me, it's okay now? And the answer for me was yes. So I'm not so much opposed to dying. It's okay. If that's what it takes to do what Mother Nature has in mind, I'm there supporting it because I have a great deal of spiritual faith. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. For Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health or you'd like to enter our conversation with us. That's 888-874-4888.
Well, a groundbreaking study reveals that the best way to absorb iron from non-meat sources is not from iron supplements. Consuming iron from legumes is the best way to absorb it.
Well, that's really true, and it should be pretty naive to think that sucking on a nail, okay, that's made of iron, is the best way to get your iron, or to even get it in the form of a liquid, okay, that's ferrous sulfate, or gluconate, which is often what we use.
Well, we often talk about the problem of too much iron, but why is iron deficiency a global health problem, and who needs iron the most?
Well, I mean, certainly our children need iron the most. If there are newborns or short in iron, they're born with mental deficiencies.
And they're pregnant mothers.
From their pregnant mothers, that's right. And when you don't eat a lot of vegetables, you don't get a lot of iron in your food. So too little iron is a big deal. Plus, you'll be anemic. You won't be able to make enough blood, and you'll have what's called iron deficiency anemia. But the problem of too much iron is another one. That's called hemochromatosis, and that sounds like, what the heck is that? And yet, 5% or more of the population has the recessive gene for hemochromatosis, which means that iron levels are going to be a little bit too high.
Sometimes people that have that have to have blood let.
Well, if you have too much iron in your system, what will happen is your body will react with oxygen and iron to make free radicals develop through a reaction called the Fenton reaction that leads to premature aging. So you wind up with more heart attacks and strokes and type 2 diabetes and
cancer
aging skin
too.
And wrinkles, all the things that go with too much aging.
Because cancer cells like iron, too.
Cancer cells depend on iron, and they hoard it because it helps them with their metabolic needs. The same thing with infection. If we have infection, microbes, bacteria, oftentimes, or most of the time, depend on iron for their growth a lot more than our normal cells do. So when we have high levels of iron, we've got a real problem. But menstruating women don't usually have that problem. And, of course, the iron deficiency then becomes the issue if they don't have enough. And if they don't have enough, then the problem with the baby that we just talked about is what happens.
I also know that a way that people can absorb iron is through iron skillets, but they didn't mention that in this article.
That's for sure. So you really should not be cooking with iron skillets. That's a good way
unless
to get too much iron.
Unless you're a pregnant mother.
Well, even then I wouldn't, because you should have iron levels measured.
Well,
every doctor should measure their iron levels in all of their patients to find out because it's a common thing.
Well, the best way, anyway, is through legumes. And legumes are things like beans and peas and lentils, things mm-hmm. that grow inside of a pod.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also some vegetables that are helpful, too. But other types of legumes that might surprise you would be carob and peanuts and alfalfa.
Uh-huh.
And then spinach is good and green
peppers.
Popeye
says. Right.
Green peppers, raisins, even peaches, mm-hmm. prunes, and there were several other nuts and sunflower seeds also. And vitamin C increases iron absorption.
Okay, so what's the benefit then of eating these things that are iron rich? It's not just that they have iron, but it's the way they store it. They store it with a substance called ferritin. And ferritin combined, one ferritin molecule can hold about 1,000 iron molecules. So Mother Nature is very clever in the way she packages things. She packages it so, as opposed to a iron pill, which or a liquid, which when it dissolves, each individual iron molecule is separate. But when it's bound to ferritin, there are 1,000 of them there. and the whole ferritin molecule with its iron can be absorbed across the intestinal tract into the body. And it doesn't cause the indigestion or the cramps or the bleeding that sometimes occurs if you take an iron tablet or a capsule. And when you look at the dangers of this, it's much more than you might think. Give a baby about 10 iron pills, let them get into your iron stores, your iron pills, and they chew them up. They take about 10 of those pills. It's lethal. It causes a hemorrhagic gastritis, a hemorrhagic intestinal problem that makes you lose all kinds of blood. So Mother Nature has usually got things all worked out. All we have to do is eat our veggies and our legumes, right? They eat those green things. And we talked about that the other day from the point of view of the chlorophyll that's in there. And if you eat chlorophyll and you're exposed to low levels of carcinogens, it actually protects against getting cancer. So it's pretty interesting at how she works and how we should be sticking closer to nature rather than sticking closer to technology.
Because, also,
that's all right.
I also just wanted to say that I think it's kind of good for people to know what some of the signs and symptoms of anemia are. Because they're weak and they're tired and they're irritable and the inside of their eyelids are very white. And they tend
your
to
tongue
be
will
pale.
Be pale. Your fingernail beds will be very pale.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what does your blood do? What does the iron do in your blood? Is it makes hemoglobin.
Carries oxygen to your tissues.
That's it. So if you don't have enough hemoglobin, you can't carry enough oxygen to your tissues, and you wind up with all these symptoms that you're talking about, Vicki. And most of the time, people, the way they lose iron is from bleeding, because our bodies don't really shed a whole lot of iron. And so we should be making sure that we're not bleeding from something that we shouldn't and move forward. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking calls after Vicki's last 2020 tip.
Genetically engineered corn, soybeans, canola, and sugar beets have made their way into about 80% of current U.S. processed grocery store items. Can you believe that? And it's up to 90% of several U.S. grown crops that are grown with genetically engineered seeds.
That's a staggering number.
It is. I mean, it's this massive uncontrolled experiment. Now, in November of last year, 250 Boulder County residents attended a public meeting, and they led the county officials to vote for a phase out of genetically engineered crops in an open space. So I thought, well, this was powerful testimony to influence, you know, to show the influence that residents can have on their regulations when they stand together for a cause.
Uh-huh.
And their move to phase out genetically modified crops has taken place in other parts of the world, in four counties in California and one city in Maine. Not a whole lot, but
that's a start.
And genetically engineered seeds are banned in Hungary, as they are in several other European countries like Germany and Ireland. And Peru also passed a law that bans genetically modified ingredients within their nation for 10 years.
Wow.
And Hungary recently destroyed nearly 1,000 acres of corn crops because they were found to be mistakenly grown with GM seeds.
Oh, boy.
And the harvest was completely lost, and it was during their season. So that shows how
committed they are to it.
Yeah, how committed they are, and they realize how important it is. And I think, you know, we need to be aware of all this, that they can't be contained either. And they're
going to
contaminate
right?
the environment.
That's right. And once it's there, it then becomes a competitive issue between seeds of one type and seeds that are genetically engineered. That's right.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about cross-pollination and
the
wind blows and so forth.
This is a massive global experiment that's being conducted at our expense.
And it also turns out that super weeds are triggered by the overuse of Roundup herbicide or the Roundup GM Roundup Ready crops.
So what you mean by a super weed is one that's resistant to the pesticide, not the pesticide, the herbicide that's being used.
Just like antibiotics in people.
Exactly.
When we get antibiotic resistance.
That's how we get C. difficile enterocolitis and how we get candida infections and a lot of other infections that are caused by what we do in terms of killing out the friendly ones.
Yep, and this new research shows that that toxins from the GM crops are now appearing in human blood. And nearly all of the GM crops are designed with genes to resist the potent herbicides that we were just talking about.
That's right.
And so the newest science is showing that these glyphosates,
okay,
that's the herbicide in Roundup, is very dangerous. And yet the U.S. is spreading massive amounts of it around every year. And upwards of 65% of the corn crops contain a special gene that's added that allows them to produce their own insecticide within the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the bugs attempt to eat the corn, then they're killed right away.
Right.
Specifically, what happens is that their stomach is split open because the plant contains this invisible built-in pesticide. But, you know, we're not worried about it in us, are we?
Well, apparently not. It's more about making profit and having bigger crops than it is about quality or trying to protect our health.
Well, they're finding that this toxin from the GM corn is already prevalent in humans. And they tested several women and that were eating a typical Canadian diet. Obviously, it was in Canada and included foods like GM soy, corn, potatoes, and so forth. They found 93% of it in the maternal blood samples, 80% in the fetal blood samples,
wow.
67% in the non-pregnant women blood samples. And some of the other potential dangers, I just want to quickly go over these because I think it's really important. Genetically engineered peas caused lung damage in mice, and the offspring in rats that were fed GM soy showed a fivefold increase in mortality, lower birth weights, and reproduction problems. GM potatoes may cause cancer in rats. Male mice that were fed GM soy had damaged young sperm cells. GM foods lead to significant organ disruption in rats, like kidney, liver, and heart, spleen. And then the BT corn caused a wide variety of immune responses in mice, in arthritis, Lou Gehrig's, osteoporosis, inflammatory bowel disease. The embryo offspring in the soy-fed mice had DNA functioning. And also, several U.S. farmers reported sterility or fertility problems in their pigs and cows that were fed GM corn, and investigators in India documented fertility problems, abortions, premature births, deaths Jeez. Among buffaloes that were fed GM cottonseed products.
Wow.
So this biotechnology industry has spent more than $572 million in campaign contributions and lobbying just over the last decade to prevent GM food labeling and keep Americans in the dark about the contents of their food. So Americans continue to keep buying these because they're unaware that they're already in the food because they don't have to be labeled. And a prominent GM food label would be a death sentence for these U.S. GM crops. So the industry lobbying is succeeding, and they're now succeeding in getting GM alfalfa approved, which threatens our organic industry because that gets into our livestock and so forth. So the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, and the FDA are influenced by Monsanto. And in the first quarter of 2011 alone, Monsanto spent $1.4 million on lobbying the federal government. And that was a drop from a year earlier when they spent $2.5 million during that same quarter. So, you know, the changes in Boulders could prove to be a tipping point that begins a trend toward eliminating GM crops from American soil. So in 2012, a ballot initiative has been launched in California, which will require mandatory labeling of genetically engineered foods and food ingredients. I certainly hope that this passes and goes through because this is an important step to eliminating these toxic foods. So in the meantime, the simplest way to avoid GM foods is to buy whole certified organic foods because by definition, these kinds of foods, organic foods that are certified organic, must never intentionally use GM organisms, must be produced without artificial pesticides and fertilizers, and come from an animal reared without the routine use of antibiotics, growth promoters, or other drugs. And additionally, grass-fed beef will not have been fed GM corn feed, and although now the GM alfalfa is approved, grass-fed will not always mean GMO-free. But anyway, that's what's going on.
That's just a lot of information. That's very valuable, and it points out how little we know about how Mother Nature works in its intricacies. It's sort of like what happens when we design a drug that goes into a human body. And we know one of the things that the drug does that's a good thing. And so people in the pharmaceutical industry will get patents to protect their right to be able to use it and sell it for whatever price they can get for it. But when you look at the complexity of how a human cell operates, and it's got 10,000 reactions occurring every nanosecond, we don't have the mental ability, the mental capacity, the intelligence to be able to understand how all those things interrelate, either in the biochemical sense, which is wild enough, but in the bioenergetic sense. When you look at the biophysics of a cell, it's so complex that we haven't got a clue about what actually makes it work. And so the arrogance we have when we come forward with things that are going to change the genetic engineering of something that's going to be spread all over the world is insanely stupid.
So we're
it should
just
be banned.
We're just experimenting.
It is totally
we're
an experiment.
The experiment.
Well, and you don't know what the long-term results are, but you can bet that it's not going to be something that's good because it impacts a lot of things besides what we can see visually. We have no idea other forms of life are going to be affected by this, whether it be plant or it be animal life or fish or whatever, and how that affects other things like weather and massive things of that nature is only to be expected as a surprise down the line.
And you can't believe how many processed foods are padded with corn, genetically engineered corn and soy
loaded.
Products. They're full of it.
Well, we should take we should make every effort.
And also, I was thinking, think about these soy drinks. A lot of people are drinking soy drinks, and they think, well, it's good because it's got protein and all that. Well, there's a dark side to soy, but one of the dark sides to soy is the genetically engineered soy, because if it's not organic, that's what you're getting.
Well, that's right. So it takes a kind of respect for nature before you start messing around with things. You know, when your back is to the wall and things are really serious, you might take a few more risks. But to just casually do it because it's something that's going to allow you to put more pesticide on the plant without killing the plant, but will kill the pests that are involved, is irresponsible.
And the company that's making the product is also making the chemotherapy, and they're also making the pesticides.
Well, there's a full service organization
for
you.
Yeah, full service.
Well, that's right. And it's maddening to see this kind of thinking perpetuate itself. Because we get brainwashed into thinking, oh, there's no big problem with that, but we don't know what we're talking about because we haven't studied it. The other problem is you can bet that the people that are making these products are not divulging all the information that they have found in their research. They withhold that. And then down the road, it may come out that there was a problem that they knew about, and they'll deny it then too, but they'll say, oh, yeah, we'll take it off the market. It's much like the Vioxx story, which you can read about if you want to. So this is this becomes a business that has little to do with service, has a complete disregard for environmental safety, and is setting the stage for a disaster to happen, which you can bet it will. So when we're looking at how do we live in nature the most effective way, it's like accommodate to nature. If you want to eat something that's safe, make sure that it looks like something that was made in nature. Does it look like a tomato? Or a pistachio nut, or a string bean.
Yeah, but sometimes they look like it, and they're genetically engineered, or they're cloned.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And you've got a great point there. You can't tell. So it's getting even more serious than when you could tell.
I think the safest place to buy food is at the farmer's market.
Well, probably so, as long as you know it's organic. But if it's not, like you said, then how do you know that you're getting something that doesn't have something in it that's going to cause a problem for you? Or cause a problem for the environment and then affect you. So it's about personal responsibility. It's about living in nature in harmony rather than thinking about how can I make an extra buck by doing something to make a soybean that can take 15 times the amount of pesticide because it won't kill the soybean plant if you put that much on, but it will kill the pesticides or the herbicides or the all the things that you don't want in your garden out of there. So that's really an important message that you brought up, Vicki. Thanks.
You know, medical, the number here, if you have any questions about your health, because we're getting close to the end of the show, is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Medical debt has become a huge problem in California, especially with those under 65. So more and more people are becoming uninsured or they have high deductibles, and Medi-Cal patient coverage has been deleting certain services, and many doctors can't afford to treat them. Well, plus, they're going to be getting money out of Medicare.
You know, when we had health care reform as a big issue back in 2009, and Obama was promising all these wonderful things, it seemed ludicrous to me then. How can you promise to put 30 or 50 million uninsured people into the insurance system and still be able to afford to provide services with a budget that's going to be smaller? It doesn't make any sense. So what's happening now is exactly what we predicted, and that's that we're taking $500 million out of the Medicare budget. We're going to be cutting back Medicaid services. And I have to tell you, Medicaid services are pathetic to start with. If you think that that's good health care, it's nothing like what the wealthy people in this country get, and it's certainly nothing like what our Congress members get.
Well, and then taking money out of Medicare, I mean, those are the people that obviously are going to need the medical care because they're getting older.
Well, that's right. I mean, nobody's really talking about health care reform at that time. What they're talking about is insurance reform and how we're going to spend the money a little bit differently. And, of course, providing health care for everybody is a good idea. I'm all for universal health care. And I don't think it should be tied to jobs either. I think if you're working or not working shouldn't be the factor that determines whether or not you get health care. Because in this society today where we're laying off all kinds of people and they don't have jobs, and people are losing their homes.
They need it the most.
Yeah, and they don't have health insurance. I mean, they're not going to be able to get very much in the way of health care services. And that's why what we have today is a huge increase in personal debt that comes from that. In fact, it's the most common cause of bankruptcy in the whole country is medical debt.
And medical expenses are just so high.
Well,
you can't really afford them without insurance.
It makes you wonder what people are thinking, really.
Taking advantage of people when they're down.
Well, that's what it boils down to. I remember back in 2009 when the surveys came out, the physicians were all for universal health care for the most part, and they still are today, by the way, too. The country was, when you took surveys, everybody thought that would be great. And then the insurance companies came in, and they spent billions of dollars in advertising. And also to bribe people in Congress. You know, they gave $500 million, they donated, quotes, to $500 million to Congress, which comes to almost $1 million a congressperson, to try and control them, to bribe them to vote the way that they wanted them to vote. And because Congress is more interested in being reelected than in providing service, because that's the way it's turned out to be.
Which is why we always say it's not such a good idea to vote for the incumbent.
No, I mean, I think the idea is to go, if you're going to vote because you think you can make a difference, then vote the incumbents out, because then new people will come in and it'll take a while for them to be corrupt because they don't have all the money, okay, that was given to Congress by people in corporations that have vested interests that they want to convince you that that's your responsibility for. So this whole business of medical debt and how we do health insurance in this country is all screwed up. We're basically about the only country in the world that doesn't have universal health care. It's not tied to whether or not you're working or not. It's tied to the fact that you're a human being. You deserve to have health insurance and coverage. And then if we want to try and cut costs, that's easy. I mean, it doesn't take Einstein to figure this one out. You simply keep people well. Do the lifestyle things.
A little prevention.
Eat a good diet. You know, get enough sleep. Reduce your stress. Weigh what you should. Do all the things that are going to make your body able to thrive in an environment that's healthy. Clean up the environment. Those things don't cost that much money, but they have a tremendous effect on the gross national product, meaning how much money is generated from the business of medicine as opposed to the service of medicine.
Well, also, when you think about it, when people are hospitalized, the expenses are ridiculous. I mean, it's something like $5 for a Band-Aid.
It would be more than that today. I mean, you're thinking about 10 years ago. And we're also spending 50% of our health care dollars when? In the last year of life. What kind of thinking is that? Well, we've got people that are living in low socioeconomic places that aren't getting healthy food or getting exercise, and where there's gang warfare. And there were more deaths in this country from violence over the 10 years in the Iraq war. In this country, it was more dangerous to live here than it was in Iraq. If you want to look at it from that point of view, which is a little bit of a narrow way to look at it.
Well, because we also are aware of what the statistics are for people that die from medicine.
Oh, there's no question.
A lot of medical errors and side effects from medications. And
400,000 people, 400,000 people every year are dying from medications. And at least 100,000 are from the expected side effects of medication.
And why don't people pay attention to this?
Well, it's sort of like they think, well, you have to do something. You know, you have to give me something to make me better. And you promised me a silver bullet in all your direct-to-consumer ads. It must be right. Well, it's not. And so it's time to wake up. It's time to take personal responsibility. It's time to take care of yourself. And if you do all that, things will get a lot better. Anyway, we're at the end of our show here. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news and health, and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and drsaputo.com from 3 to 4 Eastern Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for Health will also be archived on drsaputo.com as well as prn.fm.
And if you enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to drsaputo.com and check out our Fast Track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
Have a wonderful week. See you next week.